Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, councilman in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania. And if you've listened to past episodes, which hopefully you have, and hopefully you're subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever other formats this is on, you know we're talking to people who have run for office or are currently running for something to change the systems. And, you know, about their perspectives on why they've run, you know, what are the challenges of running for office, trying to break down some myths and break down some misconceptions, and encourage other people to run for office too, because there are 500,000 elected offices across this country, and the only way we can improve the world is by engaging in it. One of the best ways to do that is to run for office. We've had people from all over the country on here before so far, and today is our first podcast guest from Massachusetts. So I'm excited to welcome my guest today, Danielle Kemp, who's going to share her experiences running in Quincy, Mass. So, Danielle, thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Very happy to be here.
So, all right, now you definitely sound like you're from Massachusetts. So, Danielle, we connected through a mutual friend. Tell me a little bit about, tell me a little bit about what's motivated you to get involved in politics before you even ran for office.
Sure. So, I've always been the type of do-gooder personality that feels like I can change the world for the better. My career has been nonprofit fundraising. I've done that for about 10 years or so. And one of my pet issues, I've always been one of those people that pays attention to local politics because I feel like there's few and far between that are actually paying attention to the meetings, seeing how people vote, and then you're less likely to be fooled by grandstanding. Well, one of my pet issues down here in Quincy is accessibility. And I'm on a board of a disability rights group. Our acronym's ACCESS, Advancing Equality and Inclusion on the South Shore. And the current incumbent, who is an older gentleman, I'm a millennial guy, I'm a girl, he had the nerve to tell me that Quincy is 100% ADA compliant. And that couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, in 2004, they were sued by the federal government over noncompliance and haven't done anything in the settlement. So that was enough to get me to be like, you know what, buddy? I can do your job better than you. So I decided, now what do I need to do? I've never run for anything. How do I even do this? And there's a program for women that want to run for office that's a more progressive leaning called Emerge. And I got into that program. I was one of 27 that just graduated from a six-month program in Massachusetts. And that helps you on all the soup to nuts of how do you actually do it. From things as small as when you're leaving door hangers or things at a door, don't ever put it in a mailbox because that's mail fraud, to these are the rules of fundraising and this is how you do it, everything in between. And it makes you feel like you can actually do it. So that's where I am right now, and the primary is September 10th. Looking forward to it.
So, you know, you mentioned that accessibility is a big issue for you. First of all, mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about this before in a past podcast with Nikki Vandermeulen from Wisconsin, which I hope people listen to about accessibility there. But one, why is accessibility important to you? And two, what does accessibility mean? Because even I'm learning that accessibility means more today than it did in the past, and that's a good thing.
Yes, yes. So, what brought me interested in it, I believe we have a connection with this. I have a parent that has multiple sclerosis. She's doing great. Most of the time, she's ambulatory. When she has flares every once in a while, a little harder to get around, but I'm very lucky that she's been as good as she has been. One of my first fundraising jobs was working for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. And for those who don't know, MS just can cause all sorts of symptoms, but a lot of them are mobility-based. So people using canes and wheelchairs. And because it's so flare-based, it's the type of thing where you see somebody walking normally one day, and then the next day they're using a chair, and it's not they're taking anything. That's just the nature of the disease. Making many friends at the MS Society got me really interested. And then I've been fundraising in the disease space for nonprofits for a while, too, Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, which they have different challenges. And I got asked to be on this board of ACCESS by a friend who's wheelchair-bound in a city next door to me. And that got me interested in accessibility, and more than just what you think of the typical, you need handicapped spaces, or you need the sidewalk to not be broken up by overgrown roots. One of our board members is deaf. So one thing I fight for a lot in Quincy is accessibility for everyone, even if it doesn't mean that it's a mobility issue. The friend that's deaf and also lives in Quincy fought for 8 months to get deaf captioning that's called CART. Basically, it's real-time, someone typing while the talking's going on. She wanted that at a city council meeting and got bounced around for 8 different months. Finally, their last meeting before break, she got it. And we were at a meeting last night about a local development deal that she's in a butter to and not very happy. Full house. No one is happy about this except the developers. And she was the first public comment because she couldn't hear. Literally, the way she was keeping up with it was I was texting her. This is what they just said. This is what they just said because they want slides. So one of her first comments is, can you hear me? Because I can't hear you, and that's technically illegal. This is not a valid meeting right now because the way the ADA is written, if somebody requests accommodation, you're supposed to do it.
So what's the pushback?
Everything people need from, you know, sorry, I'll let you finish your question.
Oh, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but it interests me a lot because I have family members with accessibility issues. Yeah. I work with people with accessibility issues. You have seen this firsthand in Quincy, in Massachusetts, and everyone outside of Massachusetts is like, oh, overly liberal Massachusetts is just one big San Francisco.
Accessibility has no politics. It's just involving your community. And disability can happen with age, too, so it's the type of thing that it may not be your identity now, but as people grow older, there's a very good possibility it could be. So making sure everybody can be involved in their community is a good thing. It shouldn't be Democrat, Republican, whatever. It should just be, you know, common sense decency.
So what's the pushback then? Like, why, you know, you say that people are getting the runaround when it comes to making Quincy more accessible. And how is Quincy, is it just the government meetings? It's not just the government meetings that are not fully accessible. It's everything, right?
Pretty much everything. So Quincy just celebrated our, God, I want to say 250th year as a city. And they had a big thing about that. We have two presidents buried here, both Adams. There was a huge ceremony with an orchestra and famous people speaking. That didn't have captioning of any kind either. Where at big events like that, it's supposed to. We also have problems where they moved our farmer's market. Things people don't think of until you're in a chair yourself and need it. They moved our farmer's market to a field that's supposed to be accessible but isn't. And that means we have one vendor there who is in a power wheelchair. There is no bathroom for her to use. She literally goes to the woods when she's working her shift during the day. And it's that type of thing that then when you go to the city, they try to say, yes, it is accessible. And you have to bring them out and say, no, it isn't. Here's why. This isn't wide enough. Or whatever the specific is. It's more maddening that they won't work with you and they try to pretend it's accessible. I think if it were an attitude like that, I probably would let somebody else handle it. But the attitude of, no, 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 we're fine, you're just looking for problems where there aren't any, is more maddening than if you tried to help and got it wrong. We do have some of those tried to help and got it wrong. One of our big churches put in a wheelchair ramp, and the angle that it's on works for most wheelchairs, but for power wheelchairs, you can't turn. Mm-hmm. You're working with us to fix that. So it's not that we're like all litigious people who are just, okay, I'll get mad at Sue. It's daily life. And people that already have a job, like the woman working at the farmer's market, just like anyone else, should be able to get out in the community. And I know when you had your guest who is the Autistic School Committee person on talking about just getting up to the doors, that's a whole other thing. I had a friend walking with me the other day, and I'm door knocking. You know, Quincy is an urban area, so our doors are close together. I'm usually hitting about 200 houses in an afternoon. Well, you're constantly looking down at your feet because there's so many different tripping hazards. concerts. I like to joke it's bingo sometimes of what's the problem today, and it can be anything and everything, but at the end of the day, it's not, I have a lot of friends who would like to help me out, but they literally cannot get to the doors for me, so they'll do other things like make phone calls for me or write postcards. And it's just getting the community aware that when you involve people, it only makes the community better. And, you know, there's a big movement. Rev Up is the disability voting organization. They're trying to get people to vote. There's also a hashtag, Crip the Vote.
Yes,
there's
I've been...
hashtag Things Disabled People Know. Both great to read on Twitter. It's when you get that community involved, we're the highest minority out there, but we don't vote the same way other people do. And a lot of it's because you can't physically get to the polls. We need to change that, too. But, you know, it's the type of thing that people shouldn't ignore us as much as they do. And I'm just trying to get the common sense there. And the money is there for it. If you actually want to, there are federal grants to have ADA compliance. There are local organizations that will work with you. My background's fundraising. I'll find the money without having to rob it from somebody else. It's just having the staff to actually do that and hire somebody that's an ADA coordinator. That's all their job is, to work with ADA compliance issues. Because the person in Quincy they say that is right now is also our building inspector, which is a conflict of interest. Where their building actually is completely inaccessible. So if you, right now, if you needed to file an ADA complaint, you'd show up at this person's office. If you're in a wheelchair, you can't get in the door. So that kind of says a lot right there of New York City's attitude towards disability rights and accessibility.
And where do you think that attitude comes from? Because, like you said, people with disabilities, it is... the largest minority. It's millions of people across the country. And not only that, but with no, and I don't want this to sound like a disrespect towards other groups, but like, I'm never going to be black. And that's, but there's a very good chance that I will at some point become disabled, whether it's for an injury or sickness or age. So it's something that seriously will, like, has a potential to affect any person. So is it just because people don't want to do things that seem hard?
It's a lot of that. They think it's harder than it actually is to do the right thing. It's some thinking, I don't need that, so other people won't need that too. But doing accessible design in your city is benefiting more than just disabled. I know you have a young child as well as I do. I have a 1.5-year-old pushing a stroller. Anybody who's tried to move, like move your property and stuff, you know, curb cuts help. It's a lot easier to roll things down there than going up and down a broken sidewalk. I have an aunt who lives in another city that uses a cane. And she had been fighting her city there, connecting the two beaches, and they're building a path. And one of the things they wanted to build was a bunch of stairs. And she made a great point, and it's true. Anyone can use a ramp. Not everyone can use the stairs. So why, if you're building this thing from scratch anyway, would you not just build the ramp and make it easier for everyone? So it's getting people to understand that and not just be willfully ignorant and put their head in the sand. I think a lot of people on the city level are worried that somebody's going to get litigious and sue. We tried that and it didn't work. Like, nothing's been fixed in the federal suit. Still from 2004, you go to different locations. I've gone through it line by line. Nothing has changed. We just want things to actually be that we can participate in community. We don't want to hit you with a stick to do it. We just want it to be people get that it's the right thing to do. And I've been working with an at-large counselor. We just got the Commission on Disabilities reestablished in Quincy because it had been pretty much dormant for a while. There were technically people appointed, but they didn't actually meet. And me and this at-large counselor worked on it, and we got a whole new crop of people that hopefully will be appointed in the next few weeks. So that'll help a lot to have people that are just day-to-day trying to deal with these issues. Because it's tough to fight City Hall. You know, when I was calling before, I knew the Commission on Disabilities wasn't actually real. I'd get a voicemail black hole. They wouldn't tell you that it doesn't exist. They'd just transfer you into a voicemail, and you'd never get a call back. And I'm somebody who has a lot of energy to do this. most of my friends that need the actual mobility accessibility don't have the energy to be running all the time doing this stuff. We have 4 subway stations in Quincy, and they are constantly unaccessible for various construction reasons, for reasons like the elevator brakes, and then the shuttle buses that they put on don't fit all types of motorized scooters, and the MBTA will just tell you it's all accessible. Accessibility, at the end of the day, is what's legally mandated and is what people actually need. And you can have semantics, but we just want it to be that the people that are already in the community that you can't pretend don't exist can participate, and not just tell us, oh, we're doing this fine. You guys don't need to worry about it. Sorry the elevator broke, but I don't know, maybe take the bus. Like they said that to a friend of mine in a power scooter. And they said, take the bus, and then ran away from this person. This person didn't know where the bus was, would it fit their power scooter, and I ended up being Superwoman that day and loading their power scooter in my vehicle to drive them to a doctor's appointment, because Lord knows you can't change that at the drop of a dime, because the public transportation isn't designed for you that day. So I can go on about that particular thing forever. I will take a breath now.
So you are running for council. I assume it's a primary you're running in, correct?
Yes, so I am running for City Council Ward 1. Quincy is a city that we're going to hit about 100,000 people in the next census, and my particular ward is 10,000 people. We have an incumbent running and one other person besides me, so there will be a primary on September 10th, and then the general election is in November.
So, and is this an issue where the primary matters more than the general?
It matters as far as making sure you stay on the ballot. I feel it's going to be an issue where, which one of the three of us get on the actual, well, 2 of the 3 of us get to the November ballot. So, yeah, it's getting people to realize, show up. The primary matters a lot. And my community gets it. And people that are older get it, because like you said, you can become disabled. That's something that happens. It's not like any other thing that you identify with.
Well, you said that the older community gets it, and you also mentioned,
and the younger parents get it too.
Right.
They've pushed a stroller. And I find a lot of people have loved ones that come out of the works of like, oh yeah, I have a deaf relative, or oh yeah, my relative uses a cane, or they have this, they have that. A bunch of autistic people are in our group, and they care about even the closed captions work better for them because of how their brain's processing things. Sometimes reading it, they're more visual than hearing it, they can actually understand. It's just not assuming everyone's a monolith and they can process things the same way, and caring that everybody matters too. That a lot of times people with disabilities get treated like it's an intellectual disability when it's not. And are infantized and, you know, pat their head in the wheelchair. That couldn't be further from the truth. All of us want to be active citizens. And if we could all run for office, we probably would. There's just so many obstacles in the way. So I'm trying to use my passion for this issue to, help with that and a lot of other local stuff. But I'm the type of person who cares. I hear about potholes in the street and broken roads. My ward is terrible, terrible, terrible for the condition of their streets and sidewalks. So then I turn that into, you might be complaining about that tree root. To me, it's an accessibility issue, but regardless, we got to fix it. And I write to DPW, then whoever is supposed to be, and try to get on the actual list to have it part of the city's plan to fix it. So many times the people that have been in power right now just ignore your request. So you get told, if you get anyone at City Hall at all, you're on the list, it'll take years. And then years pass and you never hear anything about it. I'm the type of person that I follow through. You know, even if it's I can't get you the answer that you want right away, I'm not going to just forget about it. I keep it on my list of, I got to check in on, did that actually get fixed? No? Okay, who do I call now to make sure it's on their list and it didn't just get forgotten about? And I care about that type of stuff. I've already had a meeting with the head of traffic, because there are specific things, pedestrian crossing-wise and other-wise, that was under his purview to try to change the accessibility. And one of them was there's a four-way intersection near my house that also has a side street that's practically a driveway that has a signal as well. Well, that was the only audible signal when five different places you could cross. And the other ones were all very busy streets. And it was so loud that you'd be standing on the corner of the very busy street. And if you weren't paying attention, I was terrified a blind person was going to just cross thinking they had to walk someday and get killed. Even people on their phones looking up are like, oh, gosh, we didn't have the light. Well, I talked to the head of traffic, and within 2 hours, they had lowered the volume of the audible signal that was too loud. Why does it take other people years to do that? I'm not even in office yet.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, committing to do that type of stuff.
I feel like that's a lot of local government, and that's sometimes a thing that can help change how a community views people, too, not just people with disabilities, but just, you know, Democrats or Republicans or just politics in general, just because people are so disillusioned. I mean, I had someone that messaged me and said, I'm really upset about this gravel on my street. And I was like, all right, well, I'll ask Steve. Then he did it. He took care of it. Like, a lot of the problems sound insurmountable if you don't try.
Exactly. It's just putting in the time to try. And, you know, I know I seem idealistic, but I work with the system, too. You know, I want to be the next Leslie Knope. I love solving the local problems because, to me, that's you've solved something today and you had a general impact in someone's life that day. All the insurmountable problems that take years of policy to discuss, those are needed, too, but that's not where my passion is. I want to be, I fixed something today, and I've got that satisfaction, and now on to the next thing. So this role seems like it would be wonderful, and I care about the community here. I lived in Quincy for 10 years. I mentioned I have a young child. We moved here because the community is wonderful. It really is the type of thing that everybody's so welcoming to you. You know, I walk into the library with my daughter. It's practically my second home. There are people speaking a bunch of different languages, different skin tones, some in wheelchairs, some not. And we even have deaf parents that are signing. And my little daughter just smiles and wants a hug from whoever is there. And that's what I want to grow up in. And that's the type of community I want it to be. That you are seeing the people with disabilities, too, because they can get to the public library or what have you, not just they're stuck in their homes and then you never realize they exist because they're literally stuck.
So you, and now you're running for these issues, and you have a way of how you'd want to address them. You've obviously explained your top priorities here, which are very important, a lot of local concerns. You are running in a primary, and the community you're trying to galvanize isn't always able to access places to do campaigning. So what are the biggest challenges you are facing that someone else might face and say, well, if she can do it, I can do it?
Yes. For me, it was name recognition. The incumbent I'm running against has been in city politics, not at this level. They were in school committee for a while, but has been in city politics for over 20 years. So people know who the incumbent is. They may not have seen me or heard of me unless they've been to the library or care about accessibility issues. They've heard me talking about that. So physically getting out and door knocking. I mentioned there's 10,000 people in my ward. About 3,000 generally vote in the primary. And I have door knocked so far close to 2,000 doors. Me and my campaign manager just going out. And I can physically do that. But there's a lot of places that if I wanted to get volunteers that have mobility issues, they can't. They cannot physically get down the sidewalks or up the stairs or what have you. And stairs on private property, that's not legally an ADA thing. It's only applying to public property. I want the sidewalk that people are going down to be able to have a curb cut that a wheelchair can get on and off it, and not just be a bajillion different tree roots or past construction that was never fixed right or what have you, that you're just bouncing the whole time you're going down, even if you're walking it. So that's been a big challenge to get people that I'm young looking too. I'm a millennial, elder millennial, proud of that.
What's an elder millennial here? Because what's an elder millennial?
So I am 35. So I'm right on the cusp of when they started the millennial years, born in 84.
Man, I feel old now.
Trevor Noah coined that. He is the same age as me, the Daily Show host. So, you know, millennial enough to be in the age range, but not necessarily emoji crazy or anything like that. So it's been, as I've been talking to people, it's been wonderful. When I get them at the doors, when I get them on the phone, people care about the same local issues. Because when I talk to you, one of the first things I'm asking is, what do you want to see improved? Because if it lines up with my issue, great. But I want to hear from you. I don't want to just assume my issue is your issue. And that resonates with people. The current person in the seat has been extremely uncommunicative. And I'm hearing that on many, many doors. So it's just keep on keeping on and figuring out what your strengths are. My strengths right now are that I can actually door knock. I'm between jobs since my baby's 1.5, haven't gone back full time. So that means I'm out on the doors during working hours and meeting other stay-at-home moms. And just doing that until people know you. And it is, you know, I think you need to find your group of people that are going to be your cheerleaders for you. For me, it's a lot of emerge. Because I'm a millennial, run for something endorsed me.
Oh, great.
Help millennial candidates run. Whatever your identity is, if you're interested in running, find a group for you that will help you, train you, and be just that cheerleader community. There's a group on Facebook called Run for Our Lives that is national, that has been helpful. Whatever the organization is, you need those people who understand what you're going through that may be running in a different place than you. But you can say, hey, I'm having this issue today. How would you solve it? Like, even things as lame as one of the best walking shoes you found for when you're going out and door knocking, to, you know, I had a real issue of this came up in the debate that you wouldn't think it would come up for. I've had people running for school committee that have been asked about pro-life, pro-choice stuff, which that is not a school committee issue. How do you handle things like that without insulting a voter? And it's great to have that group of people at your back. It so keeps you motivated, because if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't be doing it. But there is no perfect time to run. If you're thinking about it, figure out what your passion would be for which position you want to run for, and just get out and do it.
And, you know, one thing I did want to not forget is you mentioned that you've done fundraising work aside from this. A lot of the people who are considering or looking at running for office or thinking about politics, the fundraising aspect sounds scary, but maybe they could do what you did and learn how to do fundraising in other ways so that it's less scary for you to do it now for yourself after doing it, I assume, right?
Oh, yes, heck yeah. I have no problem asking for money. I never have. But a lot of people who are also in my Emerge class, that's what terrified them. Find somebody who is not terrified of it and have them teach you their ways. And really, in my race, it's been a whole lot of donations from small donors. I am not taking money from developers. The incumbent gets big donations from developers. And people appreciate that. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of doing phone calls and texts to the people that you know won't pick up the phone and emails and what have you. But generally, it's to a friendly base. It's your friends and family you're hitting up first. And then they're giving you leads of, oh, my friend so-and-so lives in your ward, or my friend so-and-so is very interested in what you're doing in accessibility work. Why don't you connect with them? I bet you they'd be a volunteer or they'd help with your campaign. And really, if you're thinking of running, look at how much it actually costs to run a campaign. In Massachusetts, the website you use to do that is ocpf.us. There are different ones depending on what level you're running for. And you can look into what candidates have spent in the past, what they currently have in their bank accounts, who their donors were. And in my case, we're not talking crazy money. I need to raise, to be competitive, I need to raise about $5,000 to $10,000. That's not bad bank-breaking money. That's possible to raise. We're not talking millions here. And it's just galvanizing people and actually doing the asks. not being afraid to say, this is what I want to do, this is why I think I'm the right person for the job, will you please help me, your 25 will go to help me get postcards out to the buildings that I cannot door knock because they're an apartment complex or what have you. I flat out spell it out of, this is what your money is giving me, and don't use terms that are political jargon. I don't say canvassing, I say I'm knocking doors. I don't say standouts, I say, would you be willing to hold a sign for me in this area? You know, tell people the impact they have, and tell flat out the numbers of, this is how much I'm trying to raise. Your donation of whatever amount helps. Because when people can see what it's going to, it demystifies that money in politics. Because, you know, love it or hate it, there will always be money in politics, whether it's coming from individuals or coming from the government. And if you can demystify that it's not going to anything creepy, it's going to mailing postcards or what have you, then people generally get behind and go, okay, I get that. I have money in my budget to donate to you. I support you. Here you go. And you always thank the donors and see what happens next. So I've gotten a lot of good volunteers. I got some favorable coverage in a local paper, the Quincy Sun, that listed my campaign website and listed my phone number. That got a lot of people that I didn't have in my personal network yet coming out and saying, we want to support you, how? And the first way is I ask for money, and then I ask for volunteers. And it's less scary the more you do it. I know some people hate fundraising so much, that's never been me, but if that's you, or if you legally can't fundraise, because if you're a state employee trying to run for a position, you can't be the one who's asking for money, get somebody on your team who is like me, who can do that. I've done that for other people in my Emerge class that are trying to run, that are currently employed by the city in different other capacities, because they can't be the one who makes the ask. So they'll make a phone call and say, hey, friend of mine, blah, 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 this is me, and now I'm going to hand you over to Danielle, and I do the ask. Whatever is needed. If you need that person to just be like, I am sitting with you so you actually make these phone calls, or I'm distracting you in the meantime, what have you, just find a way to make it work for you. And I hope you have a race like mine that you don't have to raise a crazy, crazy amount, because it's doable. It shouldn't be that money gets in the way of you doing, you know, what could be a passion and what you'd be really good at. You want the government to look representative. Our city council, it's not representative of the actual city that's there. Right now, there's only 3 women on the council, and most of the men are white and skew older. And there's nothing wrong about that opinion. That's great, but it may not be the same as my opinion and a lot of the voters' opinion. So I think you should have your representation up there that is voting the way your interest is. So if that's get more women in, get more people that are young parents in, what have you, get more people that care about accessibility, whatever it is, don't let it just be the same old faces voted in year after year after year with no opposition, because that's the way it will always be. That doesn't help anybody. If they're the best people for the job, great. But if it's just, you know, inertia keeping them there, that's how you get the politicians that people think of as the ones they do not like.
Well, terrific. And now we know more reasons why people can get involved, should get involved. Is there any very quick message that you would tell people who are considering why more people should run for office very quickly?
Sure. Definitely do it. Your voice is needed. No one has the exact same voice as you, and your opinions are just as valid as the people who currently hold the positions. So get out and do it.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Danielle. I appreciate what you're doing, and appreciate you taking on these challenges. Where can people learn more about you?
My website is Danielle Kemp, K-E-M-P-E, for Quincy, Quincy.com. So Danielle Kemp for Quincy.com is the website. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, and my phone number is listed on the website. So find me that way. And even if it's somebody in a different state that's thinking of doing this and wants to talk, I would be more than happy to. So please find me. I know I'm not the only one out there who's passionate about this stuff.
Great. Well, if you're passionate, you should run too. Thank you so much, Danielle, for taking part, and we'll be following you along the way.
Thank you, Tony.